Today's Global IQ Minute is with Kenneth Pollack, who is Senior Fellow at the Saban Center for Middle East Policy at the Brookings Institution. He is the author of Unthinkable, Iran, the Bomb, and American Strategy, published this September by Simon & Schuster. He spoke at the World Affairs Council of Dallas-Fort Worth on October 7, 2013. A podcast of his remarks is available at dfwworld.org.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning on Global IQ Minute. What brought about the situation where Iran's new president, Hassan Rouhani, has singled a willingness to engage the United States in a manner so different than his predecessor, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad?
Yeah, I think this is one of the more interesting things going on, Jim. What we saw in Iran was a reaction to the isolation that Iran experienced during Ahmadinejad's presidency. Obviously, the international sanctions are having a very heavy impact on the average Iranian. But it's also clear that beyond the economic problems, Iranians don't like the political diplomatic isolation. And I think that was the overwhelming force behind Rouhani's victory in the 2014 elections. What's been interesting is that since he has come to power, you know, he's presiding over an utterly dysfunctional government that has any number of internal problems, problems that in some cases predated Ahmadinejad, in other cases were caused by Ahmadinejad, and yet he has decided to make the nuclear issue and removing the international sanctions on Iran his first priority, which again I think speaks to the fact that for many Iranians, the sanctions are both a real cause of their problems and also a symbol of the larger problems they face.
Do you think the Ayatollah, the supreme leader, was surprised that by the election of this president?
I do. I mean, we never know. You can't get into the Ayatollah's head, but it does seem like the supreme leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, was surprised by Rouhani's victory. It seems that he believed that the hardline candidates, which remember there were seven hardline candidates plus Rouhani, that the other hardline candidates would do well enough to at least force a runoff, and then you would have a hardliner victory. But I think it was also very important to the supreme leader that Iranians and even people outside of Iran see these elections as legitimate, that they erase the stain of 2009, that this time around that Iran would be seen as being democratic and choosing their own leader. And so I think that ultimately the supreme leader was willing to countenance a Rouhani victory.
You mentioned a few seconds ago about the impact of the sanctions. Sanctions have been in place for quite a few years. Were they ratcheted down? What really made the difference?
You know, it's hard to say, but I think that it is clear that these sanctions on both Iranian oil exports and in particular Iranian financial transactions have really affected the Iranian economy. You know, it's clear prices are out of control. The average Iranian is being hit hard. It's very difficult to get access to lots of consumer goods. This is really affecting the average Iranian in a whole variety of different ways.
Why does Iran have? Why do the Iranian people have such a close relationship with the United States or an affinity with Americans?
Well, I think to some extent, distance lends enchantment. And the United States is the great enemy of their government. A great many Iranians have become disenchanted with their own government, and therefore there's the appeal of the United States. I think at some level, the United States has always represented that which so many Iranians want right now: consumerism, materialism, prosperity, freedom. All things that I think Iranians want in a very immediate sense. So not just kind of abstract notions of freedom and material well-being. They want better jobs. They want a better life. They want to be able to live their lives the way that they want. And again, America is very much a symbol of that throughout the world.
And despite what Prime Minister Netanyahu said a few days ago, they do wear jeans and listen to Western music.
Absolutely. And you know, I think what we've seen, what you're getting at, is the Iranians perhaps may be the most pro-American group in the entire Middle East.
Speaking of Netanyahu, he said just a few days ago that Rouhani is a wolf in sheep's clothing. What likelihood is there that Israel decide to act unilaterally against Iran? And even more importantly, does it have the military capability to do so?
I think that there is a likelihood. We should never discount the possibility that Israel will mount a strike against Iran. And obviously, the Israeli military is capable enough that they could do a bunch of damage to the Iranians. That said, it seems unlikely that the Israeli military could end the Iranian nuclear program or set it back for more than perhaps a year or two. And for those reasons, I think it actually much less likely than a lot of other people believe that the Israelis would strike. Certainly, I think that for the Israelis, they would much prefer to either have a good deal or to have the United States do the striking. And only if they can't get either of those two outcomes are they going to consider whether or not to strike.
And highly unlikely that the United States would, don't you think?
I think it quite unlikely at this point in time, although I am perturbed by the fact that in Washington it just seems to be the zeitgeist that we're going to give the Iranians one more chance, and if they don't agree to a deal, we are going to bomb them. I suspect if it ever came to that, that we'd have a similar situation to what we had with Syria about a month ago, where the American people suddenly objected very loudly to it, which would force Washington to completely reconsider. But that's what I worry about, is that we're not really thinking through what our longer-term strategy toward Iran should be and putting in place what we would need to actually implement it.
Now, Iran's nuclear policy is the issue that we tend to focus on, but there are a number of other issues affecting U.S.-Iranian relations. One, of course, is the backing of Hezbollah. Do you think that we can encourage Iran to cease its support of Hezbollah and other like-minded organizations?
I certainly hope so. It's hard to put odds on these kinds of things, but I think that what the new president of Iran, Hassan Rouhani, and his foreign minister, Mohammad Javad Zarif, are talking about opens up the possibility of a wider set of accommodations between the United States and Iran beyond the nuclear program. Now, look, just getting the nuclear deal is going to be hard enough. If we can't get the nuclear deal, it seems highly unlikely we'd get anything beyond it. But if we can get the nuclear deal, and I would make the argument that hard as it will be, this may be our best chance to get a resolution on that. If we can get it, I think there is the possibility that we could have a larger meeting of the minds with the Iranians. Possibly, and I want to be careful about this, but possibly we could even have the kind of grand bargain that myself and other people have talked about over the years, where we and the Iranians sit down and kind of reconcile across the board, because ultimately that may be what is necessary. If you're going to go beyond the nuclear issue, perhaps even to solve the nuclear issue, it may be that we have to trade the Iranians on different things. So they trade their support for Hamas in return for, say, you know, our military presence diminishing or bringing down our military presence in the Gulf. Mm-hmm. We may need to make creative trade-offs among issues where we can't make trade-offs within issues.
To close our discussion, let's say that the proposed nuclear discussions fail. Can we live with Iran and Iran with a nuclear weapon? Is containment a realistic policy?
First, I'll say that I hope that the negotiations succeed, because that would be by far the best outcome for us, the Iranians, and all of our allies. But if they do fail, and we are left with the worst choice of all between going to war with Iran and containing a nuclear Iran, I believe that we absolutely can contain a nuclear Iran. I think that the historical evidence that we have, both with Iran and with a whole variety of other countries, including a nuclear North Korea, indicate that it is well within our capacity, well within Iran's pattern of behavior, to believe that we can contain them.
Would you not see, however, a nuclearization of the region, including Saudi Arabia?
Potentially, and that would certainly be one of the dangers that we would have to deal with. And I would never suggest that containment is going to be quick or easy or fun. It will be difficult. There will be challenges. But you know, even with the nuclearization of the region, we're really talking about Saudi Arabia. That's the country that is most at risk of doing so. And even there, I think that there are any number of things that we could do that would convince the Saudis that it's not necessary to do so. We should keep in mind that, you know, it's been the history of the nuclear world, that there have been any number of countries who had a compelling reason to acquire nuclear weapons, had a program to do so, were determined to do it, and they never did. In fact, more countries have given up their nuclear programs than actually brought them to fruition. So it's a reason to say we shouldn't dismiss the risk of Saudi proliferation, but neither should we assume it's a given.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.